Welcome to the Good Grief Conversation. I'm your host, Janet Jones, and you're listening to UK Health Radio. This programme brings you honest, gritty, emotional and inspiring conversation around a subject that affects all of us, yet is still very much taboo. So join me now for this inspiring Good Grief Conversation. Hi, and welcome back to another Good Grief Conversation. I'm your host, Janet Jones, and today I have a wonderful guest for you. Her name is Ashley Jones. She is the founder and executive director of Love Not Lost. This is a non-profit organisation which is on a mission to revolutionise the way we heal in grief. From losing her daughter to growing Love Not Lost, Ashley has a lot of experience in death and grief, and this is something that she never would have thought would be part of her bio. Yet she's learned how to process, heal and grow through the pain, and is sharing that information with others to help them to do the same. This is a truly inspiring conversation with a different slant on grief. We also continue the conversation in the podcast extras. So if you haven't checked that out yet, just go to www.thegoodgriefconversation.com. I ask all of my guests to offer a gift for you, and there is now an incredible bank of resources to help you with your journey to transitioning your life after loss of any kind. You will also have the opportunity to support this program when you go over there so that we can keep this conversation going. So just head over to thegoodgriefconversation.com. But for now, sit back, grab a cuppa, or maybe you're driving, so don't do that. But whatever you are doing, prepare to be inspired. Here's Ashley. Ashley, thank you so much for joining me on the Good Grief Conversation. I've really been looking forward to our conversation. You're an inspiration. You really are.
Thank you. I'm so honored to be here.
So we're going to start at the beginning, why you are here, and give us a little bit of that story, because probably like me, you didn't expect to be here at this part of your life.
Sure. Yeah. So I was young when I became a parent. My husband and I had been married. We had just celebrated our second year anniversary, and just weeks later, our daughter was born. And we were thrilled to be young parents. It was definitely a surprise, but it was one that we were figuring out and getting excited about. And we were sent home from the hospital with a healthy baby girl. And yeah, at 1 month old, I just knew something wasn't quite right. So she wasn't moving a whole lot, and her right arm had come up like a chicken wing. And so when I would pull it back down, it would just automatically come up. Like, I could tell she wasn't controlling it. So I didn't know, like, in my past, I had volunteered with severely handicapped kids. So I had seen cerebral palsy, I had seen seizures and epilepsy, I had seen a lot of different conditions. And her contractures reminded me of cerebral palsy, but I could tell mentally she was there. And so I brought it up to our pediatrician. We went through a bunch of, you know, specialist appointments. And just a month later, at 2 months old, we got the diagnosis of spinal muscular atrophy, which is really similar to Lou Gehrig's disease. All the muscles degenerate and there's no cure. So we were told we would be lucky to see her first birthday, which was devastating. You know, we were young parents. We were certainly the first of all our friends to have a baby, let alone the first of all our friends to lose a baby. So we didn't have any people to kind of like help us through that. And until one of our nurses, so we got set up with a team of doctors to kind of be our care team in this journey. And one of them was like, hey, I know this mom who just went through this. Let's connect you with her if she's open to it. And I didn't know that she had just lost her son in March, which was a month before I reached out to her. But she was so gracious and just really came alongside of us. and helped us advocate for the best care for her. You know, they donated a stroller to us and like a special handicap stroller that's normally like thousands of dollars and, you know, stuff that you just don't even think about needing. So anyway, I felt very fortunate and she was able to kind of be my support through that. And then she had told us about donating her son's body to a researcher out in Utah, Dr. Sobota. And I really love that idea because I'm a huge believer in organ donation. So it's like, you know, if I'm going to die and someone else can be saved and I'm going to die anyway, you know, it's like, hey, like, yeah, like give someone else another chance. And so knowing that all of our daughter's organs were going to be unusable, just deteriorated, it was one of those things, well, maybe we could help someone through that. Anyway, we had gotten on hospice at 10 months old. I called the researcher and she actually gave us some things to do that ended up doubling her life. It was really cool. And we ended up donating her body to her team and burying her when she was 21 months old.
That is really tough.
It was so tough. And so during that time, you know, we had a friend gift us a professional portrait session and the photos that we had of our family really made such a huge difference in my grieving process. I mean, I'm sure, you know, you hear stories like this all the time where it's like, I didn't know what to do with myself. You know, like you have all these hard emotions and like big emotions and no one's teaching us how to grieve. And so that was something for me that the photos gave me a tangible space to feel and to be present and to just get out whatever I needed to express to really help me on that healing journey. And so I wanted to do that for other people. I started donating photography sessions to anyone I heard of facing a terminal diagnosis, being a photographer myself. And that ended up developing into Love Not Lost, which is the nonprofit that I lead today.
Yeah. Which is amazing. And as you know, I'm a photographer also. So there's so many similarities. We even share the same surname, you know, it's kind of strange. But just going back to, you know, that moment when you knew that you were going to have to say goodbye, you know, that run up. I've been very fortunate to see my children into being adults. And I guess what I'm learning through grief is that you always look at worst case scenarios. Because it helps you to find your strength in a way and your inspiration from other people also. And I always feel grateful that I saw my son become an adult. And it breaks my heart to think that I've said goodbye to him. But to say goodbye to your child, you know, as a baby, that must be really tough. So if we can go back to the moment when you realized, first of all, you were going to have to do that. You couldn't get away from that. You couldn't hide away from that.
I didn't. So the first week, honestly, the first week of the diagnosis was so brutal. I could barely eat anything. I think I drank smoothies for like a week just because I just didn't even want to eat and I knew my body needed something. But yeah, it was really devastating and depressing and you know, it's just like, it takes all the wind out of you. And so during that time, it was really, really, there's just a lot going on in my head because one, I think my brain knew that babies died, but I had never experienced a baby dying. And so it was like, how could that be? Like, how could that even be real? Because the natural order of things is for people to grow old, you know? Yeah. So it was just a shock. One, that this is real and that my baby is actually going to die soon. And then it was kind of like a questioning of faith of what do I really believe? Because if I believe that there is a God and an afterlife and a place that she's going to go and be free from her illness, then I'm more willing to make decisions to support her in leaving instead of fighting and doing every single thing I can to keep her with me. So a lot of that was figuring out what do we actually believe to support that journey. And so for me, I think it was also a reckoning of what do I want to choose? How do I live my life? Because right now I can play the victim. I can be miserable and depressed and continue just not being motivated to live. But that means I waste the time that I have here. And so with our daughter's diagnosis, it was like, we need to make the most of the time that we have together so that we can fully enjoy it and however long we have. And then I can be depressed later and figure it out when she's gone.
Yeah, I can handle that another time. But you're right. That's a big shift, isn't it? And what you just said about questioning yourself as to what you believe. And it has to be questioning yourself as well, not what other people believe. It's such a personal...
Oh, for sure. No.
It does. It goes right to your core. And you have to figure it out. There's no one else doing this for you, you know?
I think that's the hardest thing, because you're like, for so long, my whole life, my parents have told me what to do. My educators have told me what to do, you know? And then it's like, all of a sudden, no one's here to tell me what to do. And my husband and I were 25 when she was born and when we got the diagnosis, and then 27 when she passed away. And so, yeah, it was like we were still in our 20s figuring out even who we were.
That's the amazing thing. This is such a massive, in fact, the word massive isn't big enough, but a massive life experience for, you know, a 27-year-old.
Yeah. Well, and that's the path we were on. I kind of joke around. So our daughter's name is Skylar.
Beautiful name.
Thank you. I kind of joke around that, like, before Skylar, like, BS is before Skylar, but also like my priorities before she came along were just total BS. I cared about wealth and image and name brands and what people thought of me and, you know, like just all of what society had brought me up in. And then when she came along and we got the diagnosis, and it was just this massive clarity of none of that matters. And when you die, you don't take any of that with you. And what you do take is the love that you have and then the impact that you've left for others. So for me, it was like such a gift, honestly. I mean, I would never want to go through that and have Skylar die, but being able to look at what a gift it was in the sense of just life understanding and wisdom, I feel like very grateful for all of those lessons that I had to walk through.
Like you say, you wouldn't volunteer to walk through that, but that is so beautiful that you saw that, and that her life is purposeful, isn't it? It was short, but probably has a greater impact than many people who live till they're 90, because then her energy that has been brought to this earth via you guys and how you've then approached it is just amazing. You know, amazing. I am part of groups where there's many women who do not respond the way that you have and take ownership of it, you know?
Yeah, I think it's really hard because, again, it's like something we're just not taught. And so I think just my own personality and the way that I'm wired, I think helped me maybe figure things out better on my own than some other people might struggle with, mainly because, like, I don't know if you've done like the Strength Finders and Enneagram and all of that, but like I'm a 2 on the Enneagram. So my primary number is a 2.
Just explain a little bit more about that. I haven't done the Enneagram actually.
It's great. Okay. My dear friend is Dr. Jerome Lubbe, and he's here in Atlanta, Georgia. And he is just like a phenomenal neurologist, but he's also specialized in the Enneagram. And he explains it as it's a form of identity, but it's not your only identity. So you're all 9 numbers. So there are 9 numbers that have different traits to the human experience. Number 1 is a reformer. Number 2 is a helper. 3 is an achiever. 4 is an individualist. 5 is informational researcher, maybe. 6 is a loyalist. 7's an enthusiast. 8 is a challenger, and 9 is a peacemaker. And the idea is that these 9 numbers make up our whole existence and our experience. And so the RETI Institute, the Enneagram Institute, I believe, it's RHETI. So they have a test that you can take for like $12. It's worth every penny because they give you a whole breakdown of all your numbers. So for me, like I discovered that even though I am very much a 2 and people who know me will be like, oh yeah, she loves helping people. Like, so even though that's my default, my other rankings were like tied for 2nd were 6 and 7. And then right below that was 8. And people who know me know that I'm a super loyal person. I can be an energetic enthusiast, but that's not my natural state. And then I also love to challenge and fight for justice and, you know, like stir the pot if I need to.
I was like, we'd get similar, I think.
Yeah, it was a beautiful discovery more about myself, and it helped me give language to what I was feeling and how things really present in my life. It also really helped me with my husband and other relationships, because you start to understand other people and why they are the way that they are. There's a really beautiful book called The Sacred Enneagram. Another popular book about the Enneagram is The Road Back to You. I did read The Sacred Enneagram, and it was just phenomenal. And it really helps you understand people, knowing that everyone is the way they are from a place of pain. And so it helps you have more empathy for people and more understanding as you kind of get to know people better and understand, like, you know, their default number. Yeah. And then the StrengthsFinders is more, I think it's geared more towards business, you know, but I did that as well. And all of my numbers were, or my strengths were, like competitive, futuristic, community, but it was like very much like entrepreneurial spirit and, like, you know, more kind of like go out there and do your thing. Oh, Achiever was one of them. So because of that, I feel like just the, like, who I am allowed me to come out of that victim mindset probably like sooner or more easily, just because of who I am.
Yeah. And also, I'm guessing before Skylar passed on, that you must have had this kind of introduced to you in the past. I mean, these thought processes or the idea that, you know, there's more to you or something like that. Had you already been involved in that part of the thought processes?
I think so. You know, I hadn't done the StrengthsFinders or Enneagram or any of that before she was born or before I even lost her. But I think my parents have taught me to be resilient. So, like, as a kid, I was actually really shy. I just didn't want to, like, upset anyone. And so I really would just not engage with people. And there was one day I came home really sad and my mom asked me what happened. And I said, I think it was like 5 or 6. She tells me the story, so that's why I have the recollection of it. But she was like, you know, you came home, you're really sad, and I asked you what happened. And you said that, like, you didn't get picked for the team, whatever it was, kickball or whatever. And she was like, well, were you the only one not picked? And I said, no, there were a few other people who weren't picked because we just had too many people. And she was like, okay, so what you do is you go back out tomorrow, and if you're not picked again, you gather all the other people who aren't picked and you start your own game. And so I did. And I came home the next day, like, really happy. And my mom was like, okay, so what happened? And I was like, we played our own game and everyone wanted to play our game. And it was, like, so much more fun. I think, you know, my parents did a good job of giving me confidence to bounce back from situations where I felt defeated.
Yeah. And looking at things differently.
Yes.
Because that's what that was, isn't it? Your mom helped you look at that differently. And when you then searched for your beliefs of how you deal with Skylar passing, then it's the same. How do I look at it differently? How do I get something better from this? It's a great asset that your mom gave you. And so then that would then lead you on to doing this to learn even more.
Yes. So being the achiever and future thinking person, and again, that, like, the loyalist and the Enneagram pieces also, just, I love learning. I think learning was the last StrengthsFinder, actually. So it was like the learning, the achiever. It was like, okay, like, I don't know why I went through what I just went through. I don't have that answer. But I also know I don't really need that answer to do something with it, you know? So it's like, I know that I have all of these skills. I know respiratory therapy. I know GI nursing. I know physical therapy for all of her treatments that I had to do at home. I understand what it's like to go through the terminal diagnosis and the death. I know, you know, just, like, so much about what helped me in my grief. And so really I just sat and thought, well, okay, I'm still breathing. So I held her as she stopped breathing. And it was one of those things where I felt her take her last breath and I felt her heart stop beating. And it was one of those moments where I understood why people die of a broken heart. Like, it was so painful. And I was like, why am I still breathing?
It seems cruel, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. But part of me was like, all right, well, I'm still breathing. So what can I do with this? Why am I still breathing? So I don't know why I lost her. I don't know why she died, but why am I still breathing? I really sat and thought about it because, you know, for 2 years I had been a full-time mom and caregiver. And so I really was struggling with my identity of who am I now? And what do I do with this? So I really considered like going back to nursing school because again, I had a lot of medical knowledge on how to care for really fragile, you know, terminally diagnosed people, especially with kids. I was like, maybe I should be a pediatric nurse. I don't know. The more I was like, you know, there are lots of other nurses out there, but like no one's really talking about grief. And no one's helping people grieve, and no one's helping the community figure out what to do with those people either. I mean, I'm sure you have so many stories about this, but like our community, we had some incredible people show up and really like stick it out with us. But we had so many people disappear.
Because they can't handle it.
Right. And so that for me was like, we need to fix that because that's so messed up. When you're in it, you don't have the choice to step away.
In fact, you have to step in. That's the hard bit, isn't it? You've got to walk into this. In fact, I was talking to someone today. In fact, this guy's going to be a guest in a future program. And we were talking about how death and grief, it's hidden away. It's almost like it's not accepted as part of life. Well, when it harms you, it's crazy, isn't it? And you're like, hang on a minute, but it is part of life because I'm living and this is where I'm at. And it can be any one of us. People would say like, oh, you know, that's so awful that it's happened to you. And I go, yeah, well, it could happen to you, you know, because I went to bed that night. I was expecting to wake up the following day and still have 3 children alive. And I didn't. And there's nothing special about me. Now I'm an ordinary woman. And as you know, you were going through life. We're doing what everyone tells us we should do to be good citizens. And lo and behold, you know, that horrible thing happens. And, you know, and I get the feeling that you're the same with Skylar. It's hard to say that that is a horrible thing because it's to do with the people we love the most. It's their journey too, isn't it?
Well, and I think too, like it's our part of our purpose for existing, because, you know, you wouldn't be where you are and I wouldn't be where I am. And we would not be having this conversation if not, you know? And so one of the things that I've realized is the stories that we tell ourselves and the actual words that we use really matter to our ability to heal or stay in pain. For example, like what you said, that our experience is terrible. Like that's painful language that doesn't really honor what we went through and can keep us in a painful mindset. In the raw grief, like when you first lose the person you love, it's natural to be in that just awful pain. And so using language like that can be really helpful to just get the pain out and like express it. But I think where people get stuck in their grief, and this is where, as you were saying, you know, you've met people who aren't as resilient as I am, or, you know, who aren't able to move quickly through healing, is that sometimes the language holds us back. I would hear myself saying like, oh yeah, she was taken from me too soon. Like a piece of me died that day and I'll never get it back. Early on, that adequately, you know, described and accurately described how I was feeling. But over time, I knew that if I held on to that narrative, it would actually keep me in that place of pain. What I tried to do was to intentionally shift my language. Even if I didn't feel it, it was like, no, I believe that she came to fulfill her purpose. And her purpose was accomplished in 21 months, you know? And so like that makes me feel so much more proud that like my daughter came and she got it done. But also like her purpose was partly in waking me up, you know? And so now she's set me on a path to help thousands and thousands of people that I'm incredibly grateful for. And so just shifting my stories and my language really helped me get out of that victimization and being like, oh, this happened to me. And then instead shifting my mind to, no, this happened for me.
Yeah, that's really powerful. What I'm finding is that there's a paradox in all of this, though, because you know, this is lovely language and it does help. I'm also not sure what I think about using the word healing in this, because I've found that when you lose a child or a parent, someone you're really close to, a part of you does die with them because the same person doesn't exist beyond it. Or this is my experience of this anyway. But like you say, you can get stuck by saying that died when they did. But what's growing afterwards? Because when something dies, something grows. And that's just a universal law. Out of that part that went missing for you, then there's new growth, isn't there? There's new life, really, that came through you. Does that make sense?
Yeah. To me, that's part of healing, though. Healing, to me, when you're talking about healing for grief, isn't that you're like, you can never get back the person you lost, right? So that wound will never be made whole in the way that it was, but it can still transform. And so for me, it's like my wound in losing Skylar is not necessarily something that I'm trying to heal by replacing or fixing or like getting her back in any way.
Or making life like it previously was, I think. Yeah, that's not happening, is it?
Yeah, like letting go of all of that. Yeah, it's not happening.
Not happening. Exactly.
Yeah, in fact, it's like quite the opposite. It's like you aren't the same person.
Get blasted apart, and then you'll figure out what pieces you want to pick up.
So I look at healing from loss as a transformation of new growth. Like you think about when you cut your finger, your healing is your blood clots. It makes platelets. It starts healing, like covering the wound to stop the bleeding. And then new cells grow. And then your skin grows and it covers that cut. And then pretty soon your finger is whole again. So for me, it's like the healing is similar in that, you know, it's not like we've felt a wound. We've been, like you said, just broken wide open. And so to me, our healing is that we get to really stop and take a moment to reevaluate our life and then choose with intention how we want to rebuild it. And that rebuilding is the healing.
And the transformation, isn't it? That's what's the difference in it. And healing is a softer, nurturing word. And you need nurture at that time of healing.
Absolutely. Self-care is so critical in that period.
It is. Number one, I think. I remember somebody saying to me, you know, your only job now is self-care. That's it.
I would agree. Yeah, because when you experience loss, especially if there's trauma associated with it, your amygdala, like that reptile part of your brain in trauma, gets activated and it focuses on survival. And so if you are in survival mode, your prefrontal cortex, which is right behind your forehead, that front part of your brain, does not come online. So that prefrontal cortex is what's responsible for rational thinking. It's where we can choose emotions and say like, I'm going to choose empathy. I'm going to choose love right now instead of fear. But because of that trauma and the loss and our survival mode kicking in, that reptile brain is like, nope, you're focused on you and you alone and no one else matters. You have to survive right now. And part of the healing is to get back into our prefrontal cortex where we can say, hey, we're safe and we're going to choose to love again.
Do you know, it's interesting. I love how you've described it like that. I used to say to people, I felt like my body was walking along, but my heart and everything was dragging behind me. And I felt like my brain just hadn't caught up to what was actually going on in my life, because my brain couldn't process it. And that explains exactly the reason why.
Yeah. And I think the more we understand that and truly too, like, you know, I hope the stigma against therapy can start to just go away, because it's so important. Like, I have healed from so much trauma because I had a really good therapist who was able to do EMDR therapy with me and, you know, talk through a lot of what was coming up that I just needed help processing. And so that's something for me that, like, you know, I fully relate to, just like feeling like your brain and your heart are just back there and you're like, I'm a zombie right now. Like, I'm a shell of a human that has to go through the motions just to pretend like I'm functioning. And like, I don't know when everything's going to catch back up and I'm going to become a whole healthy person again. But right now I'm not.
That is the natural process of grieving. And that's the bit that we need more people to understand. And, you know, people say, how are you? And I'm like, oh my God, it's such a big question. Like, how am I? What? You know, it's like, just no, crazy, crazy times. So you now found your purpose, and Skylar has had this phenomenal impact in your life. And the things that you do are just so special. So I want to talk about how you got to there. I know on your website, you share a story of where you went to photograph this baby that this family had to say goodbye to, and you haven't yet said goodbye to Skylar. But how do you do that?
Yeah, that was a really tough one. So Skylar was around 6 months old, I think. And we knew she was dying, obviously. And a neighbor of mine called me and said, hey, she was a doula. And so she was helping our other neighbor go through the labor and delivery process. And so she was like, hey, our neighbor just had her baby and he came out not breathing. Like, he was active during the whole labor, had a heartbeat and everything, and then just came out not breathing. So the hospital tried to do everything they could to save him. They ended up putting him on life support and they had to choose to pull the plug. And so she was like, but before they do, would you please come in and take pictures? And I was like, oh no, there's a great organization that, like, their whole mission is to do this. Like, they photograph babies who don't make it home from the hospital. So you should just call them.
Yeah, call them. They're used to it.
Yeah. And she was like, well, we had a bad experience with one of their photographers. And so I'm hesitant to call them again. Plus, God told me to call you. And I was like, damn it. Thanks, God. It was truly one of those things. Is like, how do you say no to that? Like, you know, I wanted to be there for our neighbor. And so I packed up my gear and went to the hospital. And I, you know, just was really focused on creating those really beautiful memories with them and making sure that, you know, I had all the shots that I could possibly get that they would want, making sure that we did it in, you know, the most loving way possible, and just really captured their love that they shared together. And then family came in to say goodbye. And so I photographed some of the extended family saying goodbye. And then, you know, and meanwhile, I have tears streaming down my face during the session, but I held it together. I remember waiting for the elevator and just feeling like shocked and traumatized, because it was like, that was so intense. And then I cried the whole way home, like almost had to pull over because I couldn't see. I got home and then I had to edit the photos. And then I like ugly cried all over again. But again, like, I think part of that allowed me to grieve and feel what I needed to feel, because I think so often we, just as a human race, again, just the way our brain is wired, we are wired to avoid pain. And I think what happens, like, in avoiding pain, we survive, but that doesn't mean that we are fully experiencing life and enjoying the quality of life that we could if we could just lean into the pain. And so for me, like, in that moment, I chose to show up and love my neighbor, but knowing it was going to be extremely painful. But honestly, on the other side of that, there's such a deeper connection with them. I was given space to grieve preemptively for what we were going to go through. The photos that I gave her, they pulled the plug on the life support just a few days after that. And I'll never forget, just weeks later was Mother's Day. And we walked down to their house to bring them, you know, like some plants and beer and, you know, like other gifts to try and just like bring some joy to their life if we could, and more support than anything. She brought us up into the nursery where they were supposed to have a baby's nursery, and they had like three of the photos that I had taken printed off and hung on the wall above his crib. you know, the mom told me, like, thank you for these photos because they validate me as a mom. Like, I don't have a baby to hold right now. And I was like, wow, like, that's so powerful. Like, hearing that story at, like, of just of her reaction to the photos and what they did for her made me realize that, like, showing up for people can really transform someone's life. Like, it can really make the difference. And so if we can get over our own fear and choose to lean into the discomfort, we can radically change lives. But it takes being in a place where you have the margins to give. So being able to take care of yourself and then having the courage to say, you know what? This is terrifying. I'm going to do it anyway. Yeah. Like, I'm going to show up and I'm going to be there, and this is going to suck together.
Take someone's hand and it's okay. And so that then took you on to creating your charity, which is the Love Not Lost.
When Skylar died, I spent like a year just like working through the grief, and I started my own photography business, but I didn't really volunteer a session to someone facing a terminal diagnosis until about a year later, because I just needed that space to grieve my own and be like miserable.
It's important though. It's important.
Yeah. And so what was really cool during that period is the photos that I mentioned that we had taken for our family allowed me to go on this journey of healing. And I guess for me too, going back to the definition of healing, healing is allowing your emotions to move through you without trying to judge them or change them or fix them, and just like letting them go. And so it's like this journey of healing and grieving and feeling and just like a really being present with yourself and allowing without fear or judgment or expectation to just be. And that's what the photos did for me. So they gave me that sacred space, like a tangible place that I could hold and sit with and just be without, you know, sometimes when people show up, it's like they expect you to be one way, or they're worried, maybe they're afraid that you're going to like lose it or whatever. There's a lot that goes on energy wise between people. So the photos gave me that space to just have like an outlet with no negative repercussions for anything. So I think that's really what inspired me to keep doing it for other people. After a year, I volunteered for the first family that I was a family from our church who the dad had stage 4 melanoma cancer, 2 kids at home. The wife was, you know, just a wonderful woman that I reached out to, and she took me up on the offer. And so we followed his journey. We did like 3 sessions with him. And the third one was actually capturing his last day on earth. So I was with them that evening when he passed away. And it was, again, just like a really raw, painful moment of, you know, like, why is this happening? Why is my heart breaking all over again? But I think for me too, the, like we were talking about before with perspective, like in that moment I was victimizing, where it was just like, why is this happening to me again? Like, why does my heart feel like it's ripping out of my chest? Like, this is terrible. But it was like this light bulb. And I feel like this, like, you know, moment or voice from God or whatever it was, this is what life is really about. This is what you were created to do. This is what you are able to do that most people, for whatever reason, don't want to do and aren't willing to lean into, and you can. And so this is your gifting. And so it's like, okay. Yeah, I think for me, it was like, okay, I'm going to keep showing up. I'm going to keep offering these. And before long, my husband was like, hey, like, we have our own bills to pay. Please stop giving it all away. I was like, I hear you, but also like we were there, you know, that stroller cost like $5,000, like the handicap stroller, and we needed a handicap van because the stroller wouldn't break down and she had to be laying flat. Like she couldn't sit in a car seat or she'd suffocate. And, you know, there are just so many things you don't think about that have massive expenses. And I was like, I can't charge anybody for these sessions. So I was like, I hear you, but yeah, like if I'm willing to do it for free, like I think I can find other people who have margins to give, who can help me give it all away. And so that's what we did. And that's how I started Love Not Lost. And our original goal was really just to have the photography program where we were celebrating life and preserving memories and supporting people in grief. And in those moments, I served 15 families the first year. all over too, and all different age ranges and illnesses. And just in the States, it was, you know, New York and California and Georgia. And it was really beautiful because it just like validated that this was such a need. And with every story that we captured was just another story of impact in a really powerful way. And everyone had different stories of impact, which was super cool because it was like one family was like talking about it from an adult perspective, when another family was like, oh yeah, our little girl uses the photo book you gave us to introduce everyone to her daddy. And so it was like, of course I'm going to keep doing this. You know, this is magical. And so even in the deepest, darkest suffering, I mean, you're losing your dad, you're losing your husband, whatever it is, it's heartbreaking, but there's still good, there's still hope, there's still love in those moments. And that's what we really want to capture and preserve. But as I was serving those families, I just kept listening. And I would hear similar stories of people feeling like they had connections just falling away. And they'd be like, oh yeah, some of my friends have just straight up disappeared. I don't even know where they went. Even family members, some family members just, I was like, wow, this is crazy to me. But then I would also speak at conferences and workshops and retreats. And I would have people coming up to me afterwards saying, I want to help, you know, my neighbor just lost their baby or my coworker just lost his dad. How do I help? And it was one of those things where I was like, wow, so there really are people who want to help. They just are so afraid of doing or saying the wrong thing that they're not engaging. So I was like, we can bridge that gap. There's got to be something we can do. So that's what really led us to create a line of empathy cards. We have gift accession certificates. And more, the tool that I'm most excited about is a website called howcanilovyoubetter.com. And that is our free online tool. Cause you know, like, I don't know if you've had this happen, but like, I know I've said this where I've been like, oh yeah, let me know if you need anything. And it's kind of like an empty promise because there's no follow-up. There's no real offer.
Yeah. And I remember that. And it's like, yeah, let me know if you need anything. But then you go, oh no, I do, but I feel so awkward. Like I haven't washed my hair for days. I haven't been out, but actually I'm also out of food. You know, I live on my own, so there was no one around. And so you're like, well, actually I do, but no one was calling in because enough time had passed and they go, oh, I'll leave her alone now. You know, it's what happens. Now, actually, I do have to say we're now out of time for this conversation. However, because I want to talk a lot more about the How Can I Love You Better? So we're going to do that over in our podcast extras. And there we can talk as long as we like. So we have no time restriction.
Great.
So thank you very much for this part of the conversation. If anyone would like to come and join Ashley and I to continue in this conversation about how I can love you better, come and join the podcast extras. Just go to www.thegoodgriefconversation.com and you can come and sign up and listen to Ashley and I continue chatting. But for now, we shall speak to you soon.
Well, I hope you've enjoyed that conversation. Don't forget, if you want to continue listening, just head over to thegoodgriefconversation.com. If you sign up to the podcast extras, then you can also tune in to this part of the conversation where we continue to talk about people not knowing how to help and the website that she's set up with, How Can I Love You Better? There's some incredible information on there. You know, people really don't know how to help, and that resource gives that opportunity. So come and join the podcast extras, listen to the conversation and find out more. I certainly found the conversation with Ashley really inspiring. I loved the part about where she explains the prefrontal cortex and how that goes offline during grief and trauma, and how the reptile brain just kicks in for survival. So if you're in that survival mode right now, then, you know, just have faith and confidence that your brain will catch up and you will eventually, in time, when the time is right, step into your prefrontal cortex once again. So Until next week, where I will bring you yet another wonderful and inspiring guest for your journey of transition. Join me then. In the meantime, I'd like to thank UK Health Radio for hosting this program and you as my listener for tuning in and helping to keep this conversation going. If you want to join our community, then go to thegoodgriefconversation.com and sign up to Podcast Extras. That's where we all hang out. In the meantime, have a wonderful week. And I will see you very soon. Bye for now.